Hello and welcome to the ORI Spotlight Podcast. We're talking to leaders across the cell and gene therapy industry and telling you more about ORI's mission to manufacture brighter futures. I'm Jason Foster, the CEO of ORI Biotech, and I'll be your host for today's podcast. Thank you for joining the latest episode of the ORI Spotlight. This podcast was recorded before the announcement of the launch of the Cell Therapy Manufacturing Center, CTMC, which is a joint venture between MD Anderson and Resilience. At the time of this recording, Jason Bach was still in his previous role at MD Anderson prior to his appointment as CEO of the CTMC. Our recent announcement related to a new partnership that ORI has signed with CTMC will involve input from both CTMC and the parent organizations. Jason Bach has also recently joined ORI's Scientific Advisory Board, so keep listening to find out all the details about this new and exciting collaboration. Hello and welcome to the ORI Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Foster. Together with me this week, I have the awesome named Jason Box. We've got two Jasons today. And Jason is the Vice President of Head of Biologics Product Development at MD Anderson. Jason, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Jason. Should be a stimulating conversation. Can't go wrong with two Jasons.
Well, that relies on you. I'm just here for window dressing, so hopefully you can keep our audience interested. How are things in Texas today? I assume you're in Texas.
Yeah, in Houston, looking across the Texas Medical Center as we speak. It's a beautiful day.
I'd love to start off our conversation just a little bit on your personal background, how you got involved in life sciences and bioprocessing, biologics development, and what's led you to the role that you're currently in at MD Anderson.
That's great. So yeah, it's been such a fascinating ride for me and never prescribed too far ahead of time. So I was, I'll start back at the beginning. I was an aspiring young student at MIT, planning to study engineering like most good MIT students, and then got fascinated by biology and biochemistry and in general, as we were really understanding how the building blocks of nature work. And so ended up majoring in biology at MIT, then went to Stanford for my PhD, where I studied biochemistry and cell biology and just got fascinated by how cells move proteins around within them. And this was at the time when the human genome was just being sequenced. And so we were a lab that was taking all that genetic information and trying to figure out what these genes did in a particular setting. So it was such an exciting time in a sort of burgeoning field. After graduate school, I was thinking about what to do. There was obviously the academic track, which was available. But a big motivator for me getting into biology was having an impact on people and having an impact on as many people and their health as I could. And so, that's what motivates a lot of us to study biology and to work in therapeutics. So I decided to go into industry and therapeutics development, trying to find new products, find new genes, figure out what they did, and turn those into therapeutics. So the first company I worked with was a company called Human Genome Sciences, which was right in the middle of the Human Genome Project and identifying all these new genes. I was there for over 5 years, such an exciting time because we had access to this treasure trove of new genes that nobody else knew about and trying to turn those into therapeutics. After about 5 years there, a group of us decided to spin off in a friendly spinoff from HGS. So we formed a startup company of about 50 people where we took some of these new genes and in a very nimble way brought them to the clinic. And so we brought three new products into the clinic in the first 12 months of our existence. And so it was one of those kinds of setups where, people were sleeping on cots and working day and night and everything.
Yes, true startup experience.
Yeah, true startup experience. But amazing to bring three completely novel biologics into the clinic for unmet medical conditions in a year. We were talking with a lot of companies about how to partner those. And Teva Pharmaceuticals said, hey, we're interested in your products, but as well, we're trying to build out biologics development capabilities. And so we'll acquire the whole company. So our little startup ended up having about an 18-month lifespan and then was acquired by Teva. Over the next 10 years, I spent developing biologics within Teva. It's a 50,000-person company, but the biologics group was our little group of 50 that ended up growing over those 10 years to about 600. I was the site head for innovative biologics research and development, and we ended up bringing more than 15 novel products into the clinic, and three of those through to global commercialization for severe forms of asthma, severe forms of migraine, chemotherapy induced neutropenia. You know, from where I started with wanting to do apply my skills and knowledge and science to impact people, these products ended up getting to patients and, you know, treating tens of thousands of patients and helping them. So it's such a gratifying feeling to be able to develop products and actually get them to patients where they can have an impact.
Yeah, it's incredible to have that number of successes, products kind of reach the clinic and reach the market. That's you've got a very high hit rate.
Yeah, it was, you know, I won't talk about the misses. There were a few misses there too.
Of course.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, getting to work on one commercial product in a career is fantastic. Getting to work on three in 9 years was a blessing. And my main focus during that time was basically putting in place the systems. You know, biologics are complicated. These were protein therapeutics, complicated to make. And making sure that we as product developers put in place processes, systems, assays, manufacturing capabilities to enable these products to have the full impact that they could. Maybe they wouldn't work when we put them in patients. Maybe they would, but it wasn't going to be because of manufacturing processes. It wasn't going to be because they cost too much to make. If they had the desired safety, efficacy profile, we were going to get those to patients. And that was really has been a driving force in how I feel I've been able to contribute to products. And then interestingly was the bridge to my current step, which, as you said, is head of biologics product development at MD Anderson. Those things don't necessarily fit together. So I was going to ask.
It seems like an interesting transition. There's probably not that many people that go that direction from industry back into academia.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Through friends of friends of friends, I came into contact with some of the leadership at MD Anderson, the chief scientific officer, and was talking to him. Now, I mean, I knew of MD Anderson, like most people, as an amazing cancer center. I didn't fully appreciate just how amazing this place was, that the both in terms of the scale, size, 22,000 people, it's just massive. The number of patient encounters is just huge. And the depth of talent and expertise in all these fields. In many cancer centers, you may have, one leukemia expert and, one melanoma expert and the like. Here, it's an entire department for each of these indications with 20 superstars that all feed off of each other. So just an amazing depth of talent here. And the CSO, Julia Dreda, explained to me that with this scale, not only in terms of the clinical capabilities, there's 2,500 academic researchers, professors doing research focused on coming up with interesting ideas and seeing how they could translate to patients to treat oncology. And it's like, we have a lot of amazing, innovative ideas, but oftentimes, turning these concepts into therapeutics can be a challenge because it's just not a skill set that the group has. And so if you put that together with what I told you about earlier, Michael, is if you have a great idea, if there's a particular protein or therapeutic concept, how can we turn that into a real product and get it to as many patients as possible, figure out whether it can have the impact we think, and then get it to as many patients as possible. even though it was sort of non-intuitive, in my mind, it was like a perfect match. And so I ended up coming here being the first person, number one, in this biologics product development group. And in coming here, I wanted to explore where we could have the largest impact and not just take advantage. I guess what I wanted to do was make sure we took advantage of our strengths to have this impact. And so while I had now, you know, 20 years of experience in protein therapeutics, what I felt that MD Anderson could contribute the most is on this sort of field that was at an inflection point in cell therapy. And so there were, you know, cell therapies have been the purview of academia for decades and have been percolating along, and really over the last 5 years now have reached an inflection point where it's becoming more industrialized commercial products. I just saw all this untapped potential at MD Anderson with these brilliant researchers coming up with novel cell therapies, but how could we industrialize them and make them available to as many patients as possible? And so that became our vision.
Absolutely. A fantastic vision that we share. I think one of the reasons we got connected is that, you know, you've got this unique vision and MD Anderson is uniquely positioned to do some of that, given all the great research that's happening there. And I wonder, you've hit right on the nub of one of the things I wanted to kind of talk about later, but now seems like a great time to say, you know, we've yet to speak to a PI or a clinician who isn't interested in seeing that their product has an impact on patients. That's why people go into medicine. That's why I go into research. But somewhere along the lines, oftentimes these projects get waylaid in the, you know, publications and grants and sort of the spin cycle of academic research, if you will. For you as a product developer who has a background in, you know, bringing products to market, it must have been a unique challenge as you look at the breadth that somewhere like MD Anderson has, and trying to wrangle it, to try to move it forward to across the shared goals of many of the people you work with, I'm sure. But sometimes that institutional inertia of academia can not help, let's say.
Yeah. No, that's very true. You know, in coming from industry, which is, very hierarchical, and you have reporting structures and decision-making apparatus and a very, you know, centralized approach that comes, you know, oftentimes the vision comes top down, and then everyone falls in order with how to enable that vision. I mean, the vision at MD Anderson is ambitious, but also very broad. Vision is end cancer, which is a fantastic vision, amazing. It's, you know, can you imagine something simpler and yet more powerful? I mean, end cancer. That's why we're here. And what that enables within this academic setting is that is extremely decentralized. There's no central control. And at first, that was when I first came here, I'm like, oh my God, how are decisions made? It's all just like a huge sea of a million different things going on. Mm. But as I became more familiar with various professors, researchers, that freedom to innovate and that decentralized approach, I think, is what inspires a tremendous amount of innovation. But to your point about if we're going to carry products forward, we have to be focused and make decisions. And so what was great about how the group I led was conceived is we're a separate division with a singular mission to take interesting discoveries and turn them into therapeutics, bring them into the clinic, and maximize their availability to patients and eventually their impact on patients. And so this is a way that at MD Anderson, we can achieve both of those things. Allow the PIs to do what PIs do best, innovate, come up with new ideas, publish papers, go to conferences, come up with breakthrough ideas. And in parallel, but in collaboration with them, we can be focused and deliberate about developing these as commercializable products. So I think it's a great engineering concept of how to marry together innovation with disciplined therapeutics development.
Yeah, exactly. With that as the endpoint, the goal, it becomes maybe brings other things into focus. And I think, you know, when you and your team took over a facility, a GMP manufacturing facility there in Houston, I think it was a little bit of a unique thing. It was a little bit of, it was newsworthy and sort of popped up on the radar to say, well, that's interesting. And I wonder how, you know, traditionally the role of academic medical centers maybe doesn't span into that far. You know, you're not thinking about necessarily larger scale manufacturing. You know, you're involved in clinical trials and you've got trial sponsors that you're working with. Obviously, those kinds of things are relatively common. But I wonder how your model is a bit unique from that and how you're thinking about, you know, not the last 5 years, but the next 5 years and kind of what's the vision for sort of maybe how the role of an AMC like MD Anderson with all of your range of capabilities might evolve over time, particularly as it relates to cell therapy, as we were just discussing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think just to catch people up on where you already are, you know, so we had this vision of creating this group. I was, you know, once we had the vision, I was still employee number one. And so there's only, you know, so
it's
much.
It's a group of one at that point.
Yeah, group of one. But in terms of enabling that vision, what was fantastic about MD Anderson is the ability to do things at scale. And so once we had established what our vision and mission was and put together a plan of how to get there, it was pretty straightforward. To be honest, I try and keep things pretty simple and not make things too complicated. It revolves around places, people, and platforms. And so places for biologics development and complex manufacturing processes, we needed a place where we could control manufacturing and drive these innovations into the clinic. And so we were able to, a local cell therapy company conveniently was looking, had built a fantastic facility at 60,000 square foot, almost brand new facility that we were able to acquire. That was what you referred to. And like, pretty unusual.
I was in that facility about 6 or 8 months before you acquired it, actually.
So. Yeah, a lot of people were looking at it. And we were fortunate enough to be able to acquire it. About 20 of the people who were operators in that facility came along with it. And then over the next year, we were able to add about 45 people. So the group is up to about 65 people now. And also importantly, I think it's a mix of people with industry experience like myself and who understand drug development frameworks. But as well, we were able to tap into a lot of the talent in MD Anderson and pull people into our group who had been working on the biology and the science of cell therapy for a long time. And marrying together, I think that depth of science, immunology, cell biology, the science of cell therapy, with doing that in an industrial drug development regulatory framework, that synergy is what we're really trying to tap into. And so that's another, I think, unique aspect of what we've tried to do.
Absolutely. I think it is truly unique, and I think a lot of you know, other medical centers around the country and around the world are kind of looking to the leadership that you guys have put out there to say, well, actually, maybe we can do that too. You know, we could participate in a different way in the future than we have in the past, and you know, models about, you know, maybe having manufacturing close to the patient, and you know, ways to maybe see the product all the way through that early process discovery phase, through the clinical trials, and then ultimately, when it reaches patients, hopefully at scale, is a little bit of a novel thinking. You know, I think if, as you know, in biologics and, you know, my history in small molecules, we often have a centralized set of processes that we manufacture large numbers of doses and we ship them out through the supply chain, and it's all very well kind of understood. But in this new world of needing to industrialize, personalize medicines or precision medicines, it requires a little bit of more innovation, more innovative thinking. And I'd love to hear kind of how you guys are thinking about that now and what role MD Anderson might play in that future.
Yeah, it's fantastic point, because I think what we have a chance to do here and what I'm really excited about is, to your point, Jason, not only, I mean, that would be fantastic to develop novel therapies and have them reach patients, but play a role in influencing the field on how to do this. And I think the important thing to achieve that goal is understanding our products. And it sounds very simple, but, you know, as you laid out with small molecules, you could do an NMR spectra and know where every atom is and where every bond is and where everything is connected. So you can understand that at quite down to molecular detail. Over the last 20 years, we've gotten better and better with analytics and our processes on protein therapeutics and antibodies, which are, you know, orders of magnitude more complicated than small molecules. And so we know a lot of the key parts. If you mess up this part of the antibody, bad things happen. You can make some modifications on this part and it doesn't. We understand the relationship between the attributes of the product and the clinical response, be it efficacy or safety.
And then there's cell therapy. the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. So then there's cell therapy where, I mean, I don't know how many, I mean, what do you think? How many orders of magnitude is a cell more complicated than an antibody? It's like how many zeros are added to that, right?
Several.
And so it's a really hard challenge, but that's why we need super smart people thinking in different ways of how do we understand what are the attributes of these cells that are important for imparting the clinical efficacy and safety. And what we're trying to push quite a bit on is characterization of these products, not only during the manufacturing process, but the power of cell therapies is that they're living drugs and that they change and divide and evolve in many ways after infusion. And so we can't stop our characterization of what's in the infusion bag. We have to continue to characterize those through the clinical assessments. And that's why I think at a place like MD Anderson, where we can go beyond just, well, we dosed the patient and they were a complete response or a partial response or a non-responder. We have to get way beyond, way more detail than just responder, non-responder.
Yes, it's not a binary outcome.
Yeah, maybe a binary outcome can say, okay, this therapy works or doesn't. But if we want to push the field forward, if we want to understand this relationship between attributes and clinical impact, we have to go way beyond that. So running data-rich clinical trials is important. And maybe this will be interesting if you want to explore, you know, if every time we make a batch of, say, an autologous product, we don't have control over that process and it's different and these attributes are changing all the time, it's going to be really hard to make that assessment. So an absolute mandatory input into this is a well-controlled process where we can consistently produce a product and then do this assessment of the relationship between attributes and clinical performance.
You very nicely encapsulated the biggest challenges, I think, that the industry is facing right now, the cell and gene therapy industry, as you see more and more processes that are, we'll call them out of control from a quality perspective. You have unexpected outcomes, you know, high variability, products that come out of spec, and we're not sure why. Ultimately, you ask us why or why it works, and we say, I don't really know. I'm not 100% sure what's happening in that process. And that's not okay, at least not if you want to do it at scale and you want to explain it to the regulators that that's what we're doing and why we're doing it. That's not the way it works in biologics or small molecules, and we have to get there with cell therapy.
Exactly. I mean, developing therapeutics is really hard. You know, figuring out whether you have a product that is safe and efficacious is really hard. Look, Keytruda, one of the most successful biologics ever for oncology, works in 30% of the patients. It's not, and because they can manufacture that product very consistently, we're sure that it's like, well, for some reason, we can start to understand those, but we're still understanding those. 70% of patients don't respond. If you have variability on your product and variability in your responders, How are you ever going to figure that out?
Yeah, it all looks like noise. It's kind of hard to discern what's what. One of the things you touched on that I'd like to just explore a little bit more deeply is the role of kind of data platforms and digital, and the way to kind of, I think the, one of the ways we solve this problem potentially is by capturing all kinds of data in the system, but we have to capture it in a structured way so that we can actually turn it into something that's useful. Right now we have data that exists in paper batch records and, you know, lab notebooks. That doesn't help us get to the answer as to why these things are happening. So what role do you think that kind of the this new generation of digital platforms, obviously you know that Ori is a cloud native platform and we're trying to capture and harness some of the value of this data so that we can play it back to teams like yours and say, this is what the system sees happening in your process, and let those really expert people then make adjustments, because right now a little bit we're flying blind. You know, we have rudimentary tools to try and understand it, but the depth of understanding is missing. So what do you think, you know, as you look forward, what does good look like on the digital side that really helps us overcome some of these challenges?
It's such a critical area. I mean, there's a tremendous focus on developing analytic tools to assess things. Whether it's, you know, single cell sequencing or CyTOF or flow cytometry, or other assessments of metabolites, there's a lot of focus on developing new tools and to generate lots of data. But if we don't have ways of integrating and interrogating that data, it just, whether it sits in a paper batch record, whether it sits disintegrated on a shelf or on a shared drive somewhere, unless we have a way of pulling all this information together and assessing it, it doesn't help us. To the fundamental point that we talked about tying these attributes, which we can, you know, getting a handle on defining, to clinical outcomes. So we have to make that data available, accessible, and in a way that's digestible. And so I think focus on that is critically, critically important.
Absolutely. I mean, the way we talk about this issue, I'm not sure if it's the right way, but it's the way we're kind of thinking about it now, is the data in itself isn't valuable. It kind of turns into noise because it's unstructured and there's so much of it. Like literally you can have, you know, be easily overwhelmed by all of the data that's out there or that you could possibly capture. You need a way to translate that data by structuring it and ultimately analyzing it to give it, turn it into information, because then information becomes actionable. It helps us see trends. It helps us anticipate what might happen in the future. It helps us compare against benchmarks or standards or what good looks like. And then the next iteration is insights. It helps us actually see things that we wouldn't have otherwise seen, potentially, because we don't have that breadth of view. And, you know, I'm not as smart as a neural network is at recognizing patterns and assigning, doing multivariate analysis and regression analysis on the fly and telling us what's meaningful and what's not. But ultimately, because of the complexity, as you said, the complexity of the inputs in a cell therapy process, potentially, you're bringing in a highly variable input. And then we're running a process around it. And often, you know, that process needs to be standardized, obviously, because it's been approved. And so applying the same things to the same standard process to a variable input leads to a variable output sometimes. And so we're thinking about how we build in adaptive control within a framework to say, okay, well, this is what we see and this is what we need to do, because we're focused on that same endpoint, right? So we're trying to get to the same place every time. It's almost like, you know, you're driving across Houston and you take a different route every time, but you're still trying to get to the same place. I think that for me seems like, you know, how that data might be useful ultimately for us to be able to chart the path to get to that same place.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, that's an ambitious dream. It would be great to get there. A lot of that is considered, you know, like process analytic technology, the ability to use analytics to inform your process and drive to a certain endpoint. That would be phenomenal. We probably have 3 or 4 steps we have to get through before we can get to that point. It would just understanding this relationship of, you know, I think the important thing is not just all the attributes, but what we call the critical attributes, those ones that really impact safety and efficacy as a broad bucket. Because things can vary. We're never going to be able to produce the exact same product. It's a population of cells. There's going to be heterogeneity. somehow we need to be able to dissect the changes that are impactful on the safety and efficacy and those which don't have an impact. If we can make that assessment and then understand for those critical ones, how do the ways we control the process impact those attributes, then we're starting to get to the dream scenario that you laid out. And that would be fantastic.
Yeah, those CQAs, apparently I'm learning, you know, experts like you teaching me critical quality attributes and other things we need to pay attention to, because again, it's separating the noise from what really is important to know and then being able to drive those things you need to know forward.
Exactly. These things that sound like buzzwords or just like, okay, what are all those guys talking about? CQAs and all this stuff. But what it helps you do as drug developers and in conversations with regulators is have focused conversations, because especially with the cell therapy, if you're trying to control every aspect of a cell, literally impossible. Impossible. But if you could say, you know, these key attributes we know are important, we understand how our process controls them, and importantly, we can make changes and assess if there, we can make changes to the process and assess if those have an impact on those critical quality attributes, then that allows us to innovate on how we produce these products. If you don't have that, if you don't have that kind of insight into how your process affects your attributes, what you're then left with is we can't make any changes because we don't understand anything. And so the only safe way is to just keep doing it the way we've been doing it for the last, you know, part of this process. And that is the real downside of not understanding your product, because then you can't make changes. And these products have a long life cycle, right? Products we develop take us maybe 5 years, 10 years, even though cell therapies are very fast, maybe 5 years, oftentimes closer to 10 years to get to a commercial product, and then hopefully have a lifespan of impacting patients for 5 or 10 years after that, or longer. So it could be 20 years from when you conceived the product, is first started manufacturing it, to where it's still a commercial product. And, you know, all the technology advancement and improvements that come along with that, if you're not able to take advantage of those improvements, you're going to be stuck. And that's what's going to create, you know, high costs, and not be able to drive down those costs, not be able to shorten production times and those kind of things. So that's the, in the big sense, why it's so important to understand our products.
And ultimately it impacts the big goal we talked about up front, is if you're using a 20-year-old process, your ability to treat lots of patients and treat them cost effectively is diminished. You know, we need to be able to leverage those new technologies and make sure that we can take advantage of them.
Precisely.
So I wanted to ask you if the role of an academic medical center like MD Anderson, and you know, obviously you partner with, you know, across the industry, across industry players like therapy developers and also now CDMOs and to some extent, how are those relationships either similar or different as you see them kind of evolving over time in relation to cell therapy versus the traditional way? I mean, rudimentary understanding, you know, I'm not a scientist, so I'll immediately get out of my depth, but you know, it's sort of someone's got an interesting, a novel therapeutic. They'll want to come work with your principal investigators to potentially run a clinical trial, or you develop an in-house program. It's kind of how it's been done normally. But it seems to me that there's an evolution in the model, and those relationships seem to be changing in some ways. And I'd love to hear how, given that your group has grown from you to 65 people, there's obviously investment going into that arm of the organization, and I'd love to hear how those relationships are evolving over time.
Yeah, I think you're very, very perceptive observation. Those people really seeing the landscape, see how the potential of doing things differently for cell therapy can really accelerate things. So I think just like you said, traditionally academic medical centers and academia in general play two roles in drug development, if you will. Centers for Innovation, clearly a lot of breakthrough ideas and concepts, happen at medical centers that we talked about a few minutes ago about the decentralized and just the boiling pot of interesting innovations that come out. But then typically those would go into industry to industrialize, develop, and then eventually may come back to an academic medical center to, hey, here's a clinical protocol. You know, can you help enroll some patients for this? Which is, that model has worked well, but with cell therapy, and what we're trying to do is upend that model a bit, where, you know, the biotech landscape is so exciting over the last, especially the last 5 years in cell therapy. There's so much money that's poured into that, so many smart people working on innovations in cell therapy in biotech, that there's a tremendous amount of innovation going on there. And yet these companies who are very innovative and very, have some potential breakthrough products, face many of the same challenges as academic faculty of, okay, now I need to industrialize my product. Now I need to get people with drug development experience. How do I think about how to potentially commercialize a product early on? And how do I execute the logistics of an autologous clinical cell therapy trial and the dance between enrolling patients, getting the manufacturing aligned, producing that product, and then reinfusing it into the patient, which is complex choreography for one site. But if you're a startup biotech and trying to do a five site clinical study and organizing all those logistics, it's amazingly complicated. And so we've had quite a bit of success over the last 18 months in finding some very innovative biotech companies who are preclinical, have amazing products, and we've partnered with them in creative collaborations where we could utilize the manufacturing capabilities in my group and the clinical capabilities to run data-rich clinical studies and enroll a lot of patients in the MD Anderson Clinic to solve that challenge for biotech. That's a very different model than really has ever been used for other types of modalities. And I think the companies that can take advantage of that new opportunity can really accelerate things much more so than the other way to do it is, which works too, but okay, we'll raise $150 million, we'll build our own manufacturing facility, we'll hire 75 people, and we'll do it all ourselves. That can work. It could be hard to do it on one product at a time. And, as soon as that product maybe has some bumps in the road, doesn't have quite the efficacy, then, you have to, unfortunately, fire everyone and look to liquidate your facility and move on to the next company.
Pretty high risk strategy that we've seen fail numerous times now, because, you're betting the house. You're all in on that one program, and putting all of that capital into the ground for early stage companies, I mean, you're really betting, making that, one big bet, because that's precious capital to be able to potentially do other programs as well and to expand your portfolio and give yourself more shots on goal. But if you've got to put $100 million into a facility, there's not a lot left over to do other things with. It seems like a high-risk bet for sure.
It definitely. And what's interesting is the target audience who's been most receptive to this new model. Some very visionary CEOs, definitely. Venture capitalists, who are the ones who are, the ones putting in that $100 million, $150 million. They're like, I'd rather give it to you guys. You already have all the infrastructure there, and we don't have to create a whole redundant infrastructure in this one biotech. We can have a much lower risk approach of actualizing this. And so that's where we've actually, triggered a lot of collaborations through venture capitalists, telling their biotechs who they sit on the board of, like, hey, you guys should partner with these MD Anderson guys. They got something good going on. I really would rather spend our money with them than for you guys to build a whole infrastructure and bet the farm on one product, as you said.
Jason, speaking of collaborations, MD Anderson has been recently discussing a joint venture that you've embarked on with National Resilience, and that, which seems to fit with the innovative thinking that's going on down there at, in Houston. I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure. Yeah, something we're very excited about. Again, a different way of doing things. As some of the audience may know, National Resilience is a very innovative company that was only founded a little more than a year ago, about the same time, actually, as our group was started. We had been quite a vision for investing in the science and technology of manufacturing of complex biologics, which fits in with everything we've been talking about today in many ways. And as we were talking with them, said, well, we have a chance to do something pretty special here. First, we were talking about just a simple collaboration, and we could have done something like that. But we thought, as I talked with Rahul Singhvi, who I believe has been on your podcast before, as we talked more and more with them, we became aware that we were thinking very similarly in parallel. Many ways, like Jason, we've been talking with Ori and it just in parallel coming up with similar approaches and similar ideas. And so with Resilience, we felt the best way to maximize the potential was to create a joint venture, which would be 50% owned by MD Anderson, 50% owned by Resilience. We'd have the same mission as we've talked about taking innovative cell therapies, industrializing them, bringing them into the clinic, and allowing them to maximize their potential. But with the combined energies of both of these organizations and the flexibility to do this as a wholly owned yet standalone company, but we could have an even broader impact than we could as being totally within just the MD Anderson ecosystem.
And am I right? This is a kind of first of its kind collaboration. I haven't heard about anything similar. I know they've got a couple other partnerships, but they're not as deep and as kind of joint as this one seems to be. It seems to be a real first for the industry.
I think so. And I think a very innovative. And I have to say, you know, you've probably experienced this too. When you have a new con, we were talking about a lot of different concepts. And then, you know, I actually pitched, I said, what about a joint venture? Couldn't we do? And everybody, you know, Rahul and guys at MD Anderson just clicked. Like, yeah. It was just like almost instantaneous. So like, that's fantastic.
That's
Let's
a good
do
idea.
It.
Yeah.
Let's make it happen.
Totally cool.
It's taken us a little while to put all the, you know, get all the lawyers to do all their stuff and put all the paper in place. But it's going to be phenomenal. It's going to be phenomenal where we have the joint venture will have access to the amazing technology capabilities and reach of Resilience, and that science and clinical based understanding of oncology that is so deep at MD Anderson. Those two things are going to synergize in an amazing way. I'm sure of it.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait to hopefully play a supporting role for the next round of innovation that, MD Anderson will be leading alongside National Resilience. Super exciting opportunity. Jason, I know it'd be exciting for our listeners to learn a little bit more about our intended partnership. You know, it's one we've been working on for a while and are really excited to get started. Would love to get your perspective on what the kind of goals are for the Ori MD Anderson partnership. And of course, I've got my own perspective and we're super excited about this collaboration.
Yeah, we are as well. I think it's exactly in line with what we've talked about earlier today in terms of, you know, you need to be able to control your process and interrogate it, gather as much data through your manufacturing process as you can in order to define your attributes and control those, and then translate that to the clinic and look at clinical safety and efficacy. And so we feel that, you know, Ori has a fantastically insightful approach for how to sort of concisely achieve that in terms of process control and process understanding, which will be a mandatory input into overall understanding our products.
I mean, as you said earlier, it's sort of these insights that can be derived from the data will help us do all of the steps of the process better. You know, the earlier development piece and get it into the clinic, and obviously, you know, being able to have our first participation serving patients in a clinical trial is a huge milestone for us, something that we've been working towards for three to five years, depending on who on the team was involved, but something we're really excited about. And the work bringing your expertise from your team, you know, on the manufacturing side, and, you know, the PIs and the clinical investigators from MD Anderson is a great and huge opportunity for us to really help, you know, hopefully give you guys the tools to do the magic that you do in developing these products, and something that we're really excited about for 2022 to achieve that first kind of in-depth partnership that may lead us into the clinic quite quickly. That's something we're really excited about.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, what'll be a great part of that adventure, Jason, is I think the organizations are very aligned, we're going to learn a tremendous amount. We have a good understanding of, you know, how we're going to partner together and how we're going to carry a project into the clinic together. But what I'm really excited about is the bidirectional learning that'll occur. It's always surprises when you try and bring something into a GMP environment, and you, as much as you think about it, as much as you plan, and you guys have done an amazing amount of planning and conceiving, as we try to actualize that and operate it in a regulated environment, there will be surprises, and very much looking forward to learning along with you guys and synergizing with your team on how to even improve the product through that learning process.
Absolutely. That's the kind of roll your sleeves up collaboration that we would love to have and look forward to having, so that we can both benefit. I don't know if it's the right analogy, but it's like, you know, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. That was a Mike Tyson quote. And sort of, you know, when the process punches us in the face and we have to adapt is when the real learning happens. So look forward to kicking off this collaboration very shortly in 2022.
We are as well. Looking forward to it.
What are some of the things that are getting you most excited, either clinically or technologically, in the cell and gene therapy space, the cool stuff you see happening at MD Anderson, or the cool companies you're thinking about partnering with? Obviously, Ori excluded here. I'm not trying to toot our own.
That was going to be my number one, Jason.
We'll give you time. We'll give you time to talk about that, Jason. Don't worry. But interested in what you're seeing is kind of that really cool approaches in tech that's coming out now that we should be thinking about.
I hate making hard choices. And so what I like to do is enable things so that I have to make fewer hard choices. And so, you know, by creating this infrastructure here with the facility, we're able to say yes to a lot of different things. We're working on CAR Ts, we're working on TILs, we're working on some allo products. And I think while those in and of themselves are super stoked about those and their ability to impact patients, I think over time, what's going to happen is, you know, the immune system is a tremendous orchestra of different cell types playing together. And, you know, first stage in that is picking out some of these key cell types, making a lot of that one cell type and bringing it in. That's not really how the immune system plays its overall role. And so as we understand that better, as we have more control over these therapies, I think somewhat a mixture of these therapies that both can have a direct impact on the tumor, but can control the microenvironment and create fitness, all of these things coming together. And we're going to blur the lines, I think, between what's a engineered CAR T, what's a polyclonal TIL, what's various different things. I think these demarcations are going to start to blur together. That'll come up with even more impactful therapies. Along with that is going to be the ability to do multi-gene edits. You know, right now we're in the really in the heyday of viral gene editing, but the ability to do it in a more precise and defined way with various different technologies is going to allow us to have this, you know, broad impact.
Indeed. Yeah, we're working with a couple partners that are combining multiple modalities, as you said, you know, CAR TCRs or CAR NKs, or thinking about this in a multiple approach. You know, as you said, it's not it's complex, our immune system, and it acts in lots of different ways. And we're trying to simplify it because it makes our lives a little bit easier. But maybe we can get a little bit more advanced in our thinking, which is interesting. And then we have to ensure always we're keeping that our eye on the prize, which is, you know, this isn't a fantastic research project that we're going to spend $100 million on. We're going to gargle is to bring this to patients. And we had an interesting conversation yesterday or 2 days ago with the guys at Inceptor Bio. I don't know if you follow what they were doing. They're a kind of startup incubator, and they're kind of taking, you know, tech transferring research out of various labs and spinning out different approaches. And that was their thing. And one of the things they said that was most interesting, I thought, was, you know, we want to make sure that we fail enough times to learn what's gonna work. You know, it's, you've had a high batting average in your career, but you know, I think 1 out of 10 at this point is a pretty good success rate. But being able to learn from our failures and move those other ones that are higher, you know, quickly. You know, they say fail fast and learn from it, so you can do the next one better. Some of that thinking has to come in here too, I guess.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I think the important thing that I would highlight from what you said is learn from it. If we just make a product, we don't have control over it, we put it in a patient, we see, you know, only one complete response and, you know, 12 non-responders, and we say, okay, we failed, let's move on. Did we really learn from it? Was it the product? Was it how we manufactured the product? Was it the patient selection? Was it the conditioning treatment we used? Why did it fail? And so failing well is really important, that we can learn from it. And I think that's also where we can, you know, really help biotech. Tremendous capabilities here at MD Anderson, other academic medical centers, for understanding the immune system, understanding the tumor, understanding how the therapy interplays with those, in some ways co-evolves. And that's what's really going to push the field forward, understanding our failures. Totally agree. It's a great point.
Well, it's a great, I think it's a great point to end on too, just to say that, you know, we talked a little bit about data, you know, providing insights, being able to learn from both our successes and our failures more quickly, and applying those learnings as fast as we can to bring the next opportunity into the clinic and to patients as fast as possible. Really excited about the innovation happening down in Houston, and hope to come visit you guys again. We'll get a little bit better weather, hopefully, than we've got in London today. We're rainy and gray. I know you're facing some sunshine. I can see it on your face through your window. I'm very jealous. But thanks so much for spending 45 minutes with us, and can't wait to see you in person soon.
Jason, thanks so much for the conversation. Very much enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to the Ori Spotlight podcast. To keep up with the latest in cell and gene therapy, and to follow us on our mission to manufacture brighter futures for patients, head to the show notes to follow us on social media or visit oribiotech.com.
Oh, as soon as that product maybe has some bumps in the road, doesn't have quite the efficacy, then, you know, you have to, unfortunately, you know, fire everyone and look to liquidate your facility and move on to the next company.
Pretty high risk strategy that we've seen fail numerous times now, because, you know, you're betting the house. You're all in on that one program, and putting all of that capital into the ground for early stage companies. I mean, you're really betting, making that, you know, one big bet, because that's precious capital to be able to potentially do other programs as well and to expand your portfolio and give yourself more shots on goal. But if you've got to put $100 million into a facility, there's not a lot left over to do other things with. It seems like a high-risk bet for sure.
You know, it definitely. And you know what's interesting is the target audience who's been most receptive to this new model. Some very visionary CEOs, definitely venture capitalists, who are the ones who are, you know, the ones putting in that $100 million, $150 million. They're like, I'd rather give it to you guys. You already have all the infrastructure there, and we don't have to create a whole redundant infrastructure in this one biotech. We can have a much lower risk approach of actualizing this, and so. That's where we've actually you know, triggered a lot of collaborations through venture capitalists telling their biotechs who they sit on the board of, like, hey, you guys should partner with these MD Anderson guys. They got something good going on. I really would rather spend our money with them than for you guys to build a whole infrastructure and bet the farm on one product, as you said.
Jason, speaking of collaborations, MD Anderson has been recently discussing a joint venture that you've embarked on with National Resilience, and that which seems to fit with the innovative thinking that's going on down there at, in Houston. I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure. Yeah, something we're very excited about. Again, a different way of doing things. As some of the audience may know, National Resilience is a very innovative company that was only founded a little more than a year ago, about the same time, actually, as our group was started. We had been quite a vision for investing in the science and technology of manufacturing of complex biologics, which fits in with everything we've been talking about today in many ways. And as we were talking with them, said, well, we have a chance to do something pretty special here. First, we were talking about just a simple collaboration, and we could have done something like that. But we thought, as I talked with Rahul Singhvi, who I believe has been on your podcast before, as we talked more and more with them, we became aware that we were thinking very similarly in parallel. Many ways, like Jason, we've been talking with Ori and in parallel, coming up with similar approaches and similar ideas. And so with Resilience, we felt the best way to maximize the potential was to create a joint venture, which would be 50% owned by MD Anderson, 50% owned by Resilience. We'd have the same mission as we've talked about taking innovative cell therapies, industrializing them, bringing them into the clinic, and allowing them to maximize their potential. But with the combined energies of both of these organizations and the flexibility to do this as a wholly owned yet standalone company, but we could have an even broader impact than we could as being totally within just the MD Anderson ecosystem.
And am I right? This is a kind of first of its kind collaboration. I haven't heard about anything similar. I know they've got a couple other partnerships, but they're not as deep and as kind of joint as this one seems to be. It seems to be a real first for the industry.
I think so. And I think a very innovative. And I have to say, you know, you've probably experienced this too. When you have a new we were talking about a lot of different concepts. And then, you know, I actually pitched, I said, well, what about a joint venture? Couldn't we do? And everybody, you know, Rahul and guys at MD Anderson, just like
yeah.
It was just like almost instantaneous. So like, that's fantastic.
That's
Let's
a
do
good
it.
Idea. Yeah.
Let's make it happen.
Totally cool.
So it's taken us a little while to put all the, you know, get all the lawyers to do all their stuff and put all the paper in place. But it's going to be phenomenal. It's going to be phenomenal where we have the joint venture will have access to the amazing technology capabilities and reach of Resilience, and that science and clinical-based understanding of oncology that is so deep at MD Anderson. Those two things are going to synergize in an amazing way, I'm sure of it.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait to hopefully play a supporting role for the next round of innovation that MD Anderson will be leading alongside National Resilience. Super exciting opportunity. Jason, I know it'd be exciting for our listeners to learn a little bit more about our intended partnership. You know, it's one we've been working on for a while and are really excited to get started. Would love to get your perspective on what the kind of goals are for the Ori MD Anderson partnership. And of course, I've got my own perspective and we're super excited about this collaboration.
Yeah, we are as well. I think it's exactly in line with what we've talked about earlier today in terms of, you know, you need to be able to control your process and interrogate it, gather as much data through your manufacturing process as you can in order to define your attributes and control those, and then translate that to the clinic and look at clinical safety and efficacy. And so we feel that, you know, Ori has a fantastically insightful approach for how to sort of concisely achieve that in terms of process control and process understanding, which will be mandatory input into overall understanding our products.
I mean, as you said earlier, it's sort of these insights that can be derived from the data will help us do all of the steps of the process better. You know, the earlier development piece, and get it into the clinic, and obviously, you know, being able to have our first participation serving patients in a clinical trial is a huge milestone for us, something that we've been working towards for three to five years, depending on who on the team was involved, but something we're really excited about. And the work bringing your expertise from your team, you know, on the manufacturing side, and you know, the PIs and the clinical investigators from MD Anderson is a great and huge opportunity for us to really help, you know, hopefully give you guys the tools to do the magic that you do in developing these products, and something that we're really excited about for 2022 to achieve that first kind of in-depth partnership that may lead us into the clinic quite quickly. That's something we're really excited about.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, what'll be a great part of that adventure, Jason, is I think the organizations are very aligned. We're going to learn a tremendous amount. We have a good understanding of, you know, how we're going to partner together and how we're going to carry a project into the clinic together. But what I'm really excited about is the bidirectional learning that'll occur. It's always surprises when you try and bring something into a GMP environment, and you, as much as you think about it, as much as you plan, and you guys have done an amazing amount of planning and conceiving, as we try to actualize that and operate it in a regulated environment, there will be surprises, and very much looking forward to learning along with you guys and synergizing with your team on how to even improve the product through that learning process.
Absolutely. That's the kind of roll your sleeves up collaboration that we would love to have and look forward to having, so that we can both benefit. I don't know if it's the right analogy, but it's like, you know, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. That was a Mike Tyson quote. So if, you know, when the process punches us in the face and we have to adapt is when the real learning happens. So look forward to kicking off this collaboration very shortly in 2022.
We are as well. Looking forward to it.
What are some of the things that are getting you most excited, either clinically or technologically, in the cell and gene therapy space? The cool stuff you see happening at MD Anderson, or the cool companies you're thinking about partnering with? Obviously, Ori excluded here. I'm not trying to toot our own.
That was going to be my number one, Jason.
We'll give you time. We'll give you time to talk about that, Jason. Don't worry. But interested in what you're seeing is kind of that really cool approaches and tech that's coming out now that we should be thinking about.
I hate making hard choices. And so what I like to do is enable things so that I have to make fewer hard choices. And so, you know, by creating this infrastructure here with the facility, we're able to say yes to a lot of different things. We're working on CAR Ts, we're working on TILs, we're working on some allo products. And I think while those in and of themselves are super stoked about those and their ability to impact patients, I think over time what's going to happen is, you know, the immune system is a tremendous orchestra of different cell types playing together. And, you know, first stage in that is picking out some of these key cell types, making a lot of that one cell type and bringing it in. That's not really how the immune system plays its overall role. And so as we understand that better, as we have more control over these therapies, I think a mixture of these therapies that both can have a direct impact on the tumor, but can control the microenvironment and create fitness, all of these things coming together. And we're going to blur the lines, I think, between what's a engineered CAR T, what's a polyclonal TIL, what's various different things. I think these demarcations are going to start to blur together. That'll come up with even more impactful therapies. Along with that is going to be the ability to do multi-gene edits. You know, right now we're in the really in the heyday of viral gene editing, but the ability to do it in a more precise and defined way with various different technologies is going to allow us to have this broad impact.
Indeed. Yeah, we're seeing working with a couple partners that are combining multiple modalities, as you said, CAR TCRs or CAR NKs, or thinking about this in a multiple approach. As you said, it's not, it's complex, our immune system, and it acts in lots of different ways. And we're trying to simplify it because it makes our lives a little bit easier, but maybe we can get a little bit more advanced in our thinking, which is interesting. And then we have to ensure always we're keeping that, our eye on the prize, which is, this isn't a fantastic research project that we're going to spend $100 million on. Our goal is to bring this to patients. And we had an interesting conversation yesterday or 2 days ago with the guys at Inceptor Bio. I don't know if you follow what they were doing. They're a kind of startup incubator, and they're kind of taking, tech transferring research out of various labs and spitting out different approaches. And that was their thing. And one of the things they said that was most interesting, I thought, was, we want to make sure that we fail enough times to learn what's gonna work. You've had a high batting average in your career, but I think 1 out of 10 at this point is a pretty good success rate. But being able to learn from our failures and move those other ones that are higher, quickly. They say fail fast and learn from it, so you can do the next one better. Some of that thinking has to come in here too, I guess.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I think the important thing that I would highlight from what you said is learn from it. If we just make a product, we don't have control over it, we put it in a patient, we see, only one complete response and, 12 non-responders, and we say, okay, we failed, let's move on. Did we really learn from it? Was it the product? Was it how we manufactured the product? Was it the patient selection? Was it the conditioning treatment we used? Why did it fail? And so failing well is really important, that we can learn from it. And I think that's also where we can, really help biotech. Tremendous capabilities here at MD Anderson, other academic medical centers, for understanding the immune system, understanding the tumor, understanding how the therapy interplays with those, in some ways co-evolves. And that's what's really going to push the field forward, understanding our failures. Totally agree. It's a great point.
Well, it's a great, I think it's a great point to end on too, just to say that, we talked a little bit about data, providing insights, being able to learn from both our successes and our failures more quickly, and applying those learnings as fast as we can to bring the next opportunity into the clinic and to patients as fast as possible. Really excited about the innovation happening down in Houston, and hope to come visit you guys again. We'll get a little bit better weather, hopefully, than we've got in London today. We're rainy and gray. I know you're facing some sunshine. I can see it on your face through your window. I'm very jealous. But thanks so much for spending 45 minutes with us, and can't wait to see you in person soon.
Jason, thanks so much for the conversation. Very much enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to the Ori Spotlight podcast. To keep up with the latest in cell and gene therapy, and to follow us on our mission to manufacture brighter futures for patients, head to the show notes to follow us on social media or visit oribiotech.com.